Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I know it's been a while, but we are back. Zebra Stripes Podcast. Coach Gene Clemens here, joined as always by the head basketball coach of Bridgeton Academy, Coach Whit LeJour. Coach Whit, how are you?
I'm doing well. Just came off a little spring break postseason. And other than my wife, who never gets sick, kind of sharing her little head cold with me, and now has got me fighting that off. Other than that little thing, I'm doing great.
Did you do your customary get out of town
and
come somewhere close to me, but yet not actually see me type of thing?
Exactly what I did. A short 3-day stint to the island of Kiowa, South Carolina.
Yep.
And you know, happened to catch it, I guess, just right, because it was approximately 75 to 80 degrees on at least two of the 3 days we were there. So not a bad thing when you're traveling down from Maine.
No, not a bad thing at all. I'm happy you got a chance to get a little of this, you know, this down south loving this time of year.
I was figuring I was saving up my longer excursion to Savannah, so I didn't think that.
Yeah, no, I believe you. I believe you, because, you know, right. you always make time to come down and see me. It's a normal thing. So I know that you're going to make time. You know, speaking of that, with I know that the fans were probably a little bit miffed as to why in the middle of the basketball season we just went dark, you know. And I think that we owe it to our fans to not only give them a little bit of reasoning behind it, but also to just let them know how we were feeling, you know, at the time. I'm going to tell you, and I'll let you take it from there, but I'm going to tell you that I was conflicted. I was conflicted, and then I also just kind of felt neglected at the same time. And it was to the point where I was like, yo, you know, BA's got it rolling. Wit's in his element. He's got it rolling. I don't want to take the chance just out of, you know, superstition or whatever people want to call it, you know, routine, habit. I didn't want to get you guys out of your rhythm because you had it rolling. I mean, it was a fantastic season, and congratulations again to all those young men, you know, on the team who really did stand up and represent Bridgeton Academy fantastically over the season. But I felt neglected because I wanted to be a part of it, right? I wanted to be able to come to the pod and go, "Hey, man, how's it? Like, how's this happening? Like, what's been the juice? Like, what's been the thing? The thing that you know that's got you going." But then also understanding, you know, from the other side that, hey, you know what? Maybe the mind's not in that right now. Maybe the energy doesn't want to get expended there. And so I was conflicted, but I also felt a little neglected. And I'm happy to be talking to you today. Happy to hopefully be back into or get back into a rhythm of talking. No better time to talk than the start of the NCAA men's women's tournaments. But there was definitely some mixed emotions going on while you guys were away. And the pod was dark.
Well, I mean, I think you hit on some of the same feelings that I had. Certainly, conflicted is one, which is to say, and then the feeling of the superstition piece for sure. So I don't know what Danny Hurley had going on with Jay Billis and all that a year ago. With like the, you know, maybe he doesn't change his underwear or something. I heard some references to some crazy stuff, but I know that I can be superstitious about a few things. I'll give you an example even this year. And so, yeah, I think on a certain level, when we were getting ready to roll out our next one, and yet we were in the middle of this, really the start a role we haven't seen in a long time. I was like, well, the last thing in the world I'm going to do is start, you know, doing anything even remotely resembling blowing our horn too loud. You know, I'm just going to kind of keep this one as dark as I can. So there was that element for sure, which then, yeah, hey, I wanted to, obviously share with you, but the fact that you understood it when you said, hey, I get it. So you're just kind of doing your thing and letting this be. I appreciated that much. Now, and then the later it went on, obviously I felt like an ass, you know, because again, in the scheme of things, I mean, you know, it's not that important. So there was some conflict and neglect in there that I felt too. But the superstition and the appreciation for your understanding on it, and if you had pressed me harder, you probably, particularly as we got later, if you had pressed me harder, that would have probably snapped me out of my, you know, out of my trance. But I don't, you know, I wouldn't go back. You know, we right before it all started, actually as it was starting up down in Pennsylvania, the new year, we won this Perk Yeoman tournament. That's what kind of where it got going out of nowhere. Really didn't go down there with any, you know, didn't know what the heck to expect. Again, won't go into those details. So we win this thing. The head of our school is former, you know, associate head of that school. So it kind of had all these elements of being something special. And so, you know, we had a big championship poster she grabbed, you know, where they fill in the teams are winning. And so she put it in her office. And a couple of weeks later, you know, we still hadn't lost or whatever it was. She goes, Whit, you know, and she said, hey, you want me to take this thing down or do you want it? And I said, well, I don't really. I mean, do whatever you want. First of all, you're the boss. And then number two, don't take it down. Take it down once. Take it down once we lose. So she laughed. We got a big kick out of it. So it went a little longer. And then, you know, I said, hey, you can take it down now. And, you know, yeah, if you're going to just throw it away, maybe you can give it to me. But, you know, that was it. It was, I think Paris would tell you, I don't think he or I mean, we were as locked in as we've been. I mean, I think that's just what happens when things start going a little bit. And as far as the preparation and what was happening, you know, the you're cracking the safe code there and hitting the tumblers and it was coming up, you know, largely right. Not to say that it was perfect, but, and so, you know, I don't know. That can be me. You know, I'm not Irish. I'm not Irish, but occasionally I exit.
Fair. That's fair. That's fair. You know, from one tournament run and great run for you to your guys to my favorite time of year, obviously March Madness, the NCAA tournaments, men's and women's brackets are out and they're set. The first four, for you guys who are listening, the first four are tonight as we are recording this on Tuesday. And they have not happened yet, although any of you know that nobody sets their brackets to the first four as much as they want us to believe that that is the first round of the NCAA tournament. Until they make it a real and true legitimate round, it's going to be a first four, and it's probably not going to be recognized in most people's brackets. But there are a couple intriguing matchups in these first four that I think are going to be really good. And I want to kind of go through this thing because I feel like it deserves to be, you know, handled from the first four all the way through the 64. And I know we might not know about all the teams, but we can give our kind of thought process overall on the bracket. So I'm just going to start with the first four. I think the genius thing that they did, right, in creating the first four is not just making it the 16 seeds all playing for spots. I think the genius thing that they did was make it add some teams in that were going to be a 10 seed and has a possibility of, you know, making a run and putting them into the play-in game as well. Although I think in an honest moment, those guys that are a 10 seed would go, this is some BS, right? Where do you fall on that? Is it one of those that you look at from a fan's perspective and say, hey, I like that because these are teams that we could see advance to a Sweet 16? Or do you look at it from a player coach perspective and go, I worked all this time this year. I got into a 10 seed, which means that I'm comfortably in the dance. A 10 seed, you're pretty comfortably in. And now I have to play on a Tuesday before, and my tournament could be over before everybody really gets like super hyped up over the tournament.
I mean, I probably look at it more as a fan, but and with the idea that in recent years, right? I mean, that team's been a threat. So I like that. And then as a coach, I'd say, hey, look, if you're, you know, I agree with you, what you're saying, but as a 10 seed, you're going to have to beat a lot of teams anyway. So, you know, whether or not they're overseeded or seeded by having to play in the first four, sometimes that's momentum, as you know, even down to, you know, in play-in games, sometimes those teams get a certain mojo going and it actually does them a favor rather than sitting around. So I see it both ways. And I'm sure, you know, you don't want to, yeah, I mean, I just think it can work either way, but I like it. I don't hate it. I like expanding the tournament a little bit anyway to eliminate like a Pittsburgh or, you know, I don't, they can't mess with it too much, like everyone's saying, but I do think it should be expanded a little bit.
So I was thinking about that because people have said you can't mess with it too much, but I don't really understand if you're going to have a first four, which is essentially another round, then just have another round. And maybe just give the buys to the buys to the top eight. You know, the ones in the two seeds don't have to play in that first round. I think that makes it more of a legitimate first round than having it be like this first four. I do like the fact, though, that you get the stage to yourself if you're one of these teams. Like Colorado, I don't think people have watched Colorado play this year, largely, and they're a good basketball team. They're a good basketball team, and it's interesting to me to see the Coach Prime effect having reverberations throughout the athletics landscape. Colorado basketball has been better. Colorado women's basketball has been better. Colorado track and field has been relevant because Coach Prime has let his players run track, you know, as well. And so I think that that's interesting to watch and to see what type of noise that could make if Colorado does indeed beat Boise State, then move on to a first round matchup against a team that they will feel like they have a good chance of beating. Because, like, why not? Like, why would you not feel like you could beat a 7 seed? Like, there's nothing about a 7 seed that's going to put any fear into your heart. Interesting to see Virginia as a 10 seed. Always dangerous because of their defensive prowess going up against Colorado State. And then we got the 16 seeds on the HBCU Howard, HBCU Grambling. I like the fact that they did not match those two teams up against each other. You know, the SWAC champion and the MEAC champion. I am a little bit perturbed that they are both in the play-in game, because those are the only two HBCU representatives, but they do get the stage to themselves. Howard playing Wagner, Grambling playing Montana. What do you think about those first four games?
I mean, like you said, I mean, I think the Boise State, Colorado are two teams that definitely are a threat to go further than the first four. I think that Montana State and Grambling are happy to be there and have a little shot to do anything beyond that. I think Virginia and Colorado State, I like Virginia as a bigger threat, but I know that Colorado State's pretty good and Virginia can lose any game, as we've talked about so many times on this pod, because they just don't score consistently enough, as good as their defense is. But I think this could be a, you know, a great position for Virginia psychologically, you know, but I don't have them doing too much. And I think Howard Wagner, I don't think that's be a good name, by the way, but I don't think either of them has much of a life beyond this game either.
Yeah, neither one of those 16 seeds really, well, either one of those four 16 seeds are going to have much in the way of being able to match up with the number one seeds that they're going to draw. They're going to draw either North Carolina, which has scoring all over the place, or they're going to draw Purdue, which has Edie inside, and nobody on either one of those teams are going to be able to match up. Although Howard does have a 7-footer. They do have a 7-footer. He is a pretty athletic guy, although I don't, off the top of my head right now, I don't know if they feed to Purdue or if they feed to North Carolina. Howard would be a horrible matchup for North Carolina. They would be a much better matchup for Purdue, just based off of the fact they've got guys that can put the ball in the cup from beyond the arc.
I know Howard gets up and down. I got a buddy that's an assistant coach, Steve Ongley. Shout out to Steve. He's a very good coach and good friend. So I know, like, the way Kenny Blakeney, the head coach, plays. I mean, they're not shying away from anybody. They'll get up and down. That part of it matches up with Purdue all right. Obviously FDU and pressure is seemingly an Achilles heel of Purdue. But I just, I think those 16 seeds got to do something with pace that just is different than what they're facing. And if they don't have, you know, something that sets them apart, then I just think, you go out and play your average basketball game, you get beaten.
Yeah, you get beaten bad. I think for me, it's not just pace. I think it's the ability to change the math from beyond the arc. If you look at the way in which most of these upsets happen, somebody just goes nuclear. And all of a sudden, the rim looks like an ocean, and that's usually the anatomy for a 1 or a 15 seed to fall, is for that other team to get either really, really hot or for that number one seed to go really, really cold. I don't see it happening to any one of these one seeds. UConn playing Stetson. UConn plays way too good a defense to get beat by Stetson. Houston plays way too good a defense to get beat by Longwood in the first round. You can stop me if you disagree anywhere with the one seeds, because I just don't want to spend a lot of time on what we probably believe are going to be massacre games. The interesting thing for me starts at the two seeds, South Dakota State and Iowa State. I'm going to tell you right now, I believe Iowa State can lose this game. And not only do I believe Iowa State can lose this game, I'm not picking them to lose. They can lose this game, though. This is a guaranteed over game. So for all of you guys who remember last year when I gave you a couple of them jewels in the, out the gate, if you're a wagering person, Iowa State, South Dakota State, this is a game that is going over. I don't care what the line is. Take the over. Both of these teams are going to score at a high clip. Iowa State does not play the greatest defense ever. South Dakota State doesn't play defense much. And both teams can fill it up from behind the arc. So I think this is a dead red over game for me.
Okay. Well, full disclosure, my neglect extended beyond you. My neglect very noticeably by myself. My neglect extended to the college basketball season. So, yes. Like, I'm going to talk. I've been playing catch up in the last few days, and knowing that at some point we would be doing this, and even in my own brackets, I would want to know more. This is absolutely the least college basketball I have ever watched. I mean, it's not even close. It was, as it was going on, I go, wow, I just don't. I, you know, that, so I wasn't not just neglecting you. I didn't even have the TV on watching a lot of college basketball at all. Fortunately, in my own humble opinion, I did not neglect my lovely bride. I married Beth, you know, just about, I mean, I just about got through to the end of the season in good shape. You know what I'm saying? Without showing that neglect over there. So, but the bottom line is Iowa State, I'm bullish on. So I disagree with you there. I like the over. I like that part of it. I love the over. I'm bullish on Iowa State in the tournament. Certainly wish they were playing at home because they're, you know, practically unbeatable at home. I'm an Iowa State. I'm bullish on Iowa State making a run in this tournament.
No, and I wouldn't disagree with you. My point is simply that they could lose a game like that. The game like this is the game that a two seed loses, like with a 15 seed that likes to put the ball up, that plays with some pace. It's not falling for you. You all of a sudden get down a little bit. They start feeling that confidence, and now the noose gets a little bit tighter around the neck. And now that we figure out who you are, and sometimes we find out you're just not ready for the lights. Do I think it's going to happen? No. Do I think this is going to be an over game? I definitely think this is going to be an over game. However, Iowa State and or South Dakota State, whoever comes out of that game, they got a nice track ahead of them. Washington State, Drake's on the other side. Drake scores the ball a lot. Washington State, I don't know as much about. I haven't paid as much attention to Pac-12 basketball in the middle of the, you know what I'm saying?
Washington State's a sleeper in this tournament. I know their head coach very well, and he's an extremely bright guy and good coach. I just, you know, I don't think the Pac-12 has a great history in this tournament. With everything going on, it's a fabulous year for Washington State. It's an incredible turnaround season, one of the best turnarounds of any team in the country, you know, with what he had to do with his roster. So I think they're a sleeper in this tournament because he will coach them up. But I, you know, that, so I picked them over Drake. A lot of people have Drake in that one because of DeVries, the great player. But I've got Washington State getting out of the first round. I think I may have them going one more.
Iowa State.
No. So I don't. You know why? That was a tough call for me. Because that was a tough call. So okay. I can see Washington State beating Iowa State because I think they're vulnerable and the whole idea that Iowa State's not at home, but I'm bullish on Iowa State. So I took them, though in my gut, that one scares me. So that's the Iowa State game that scares me more than the first round game.
Okay. Illinois, Morehead State. I think this is an Illinois win. I'm interested to see the BYU Duquesne game. I think BYU comes out on top, but that Illinois BYU game should be a really good one in the second round if chalk holds right there.
I'm bullish on BYU. So I like BYU for sure against Duquesne. And I know at least in one of my pools, I've got three, but in one of my pools, I've got them advancing to the Sweet 16.
So you got BYU with the 6-3 upset.
Yeah, because they shoot just for what you were talking about at the start of the pod, they shoot the ball so well that can carry you. So they could lose, but I think they can beat a lot of people. They're good. I that's one of the games I happened to see during the season. At one point, I went, "Man, these guys are good," and they fly under the radar. So I think they're one of those teams this year. I think they're an FAU. You know, and I'm not saying they're as good as FAU was. They're different, but I just think they're one of those teams that could get something done.
Yeah, I think for me, BYU, they fall into what would Yale be if Yale was an Ivy League school? I think they'd be a BYU. I think BYU is the next evolution of what Yale could be if Yale didn't have to deal with the things that Ivy League schools have to deal with. But with that being said, I don't like them. I don't like them getting past Illinois. Even though Illinois is one of those teams that will let you down in a heartbeat. Like, as soon as you put your confidence or your trust in Illinois, since Bill Self left, ever since then, I think you look at Illinois and go, they'll let you down when you least expect it. And so I don't say that with a lot of confidence.
They did get a national championship with Bruce Weber after Bill Self. They did get that, but
was that after Self, or was that with Self?
No. That was after. Bruce Weber was the head coach for a time. He had the three guards, right? He had the great guard.
But I thought that was Bill Self that won the championship, and Bruce Weber took over after Self left.
No, am I
wrong there?
I believe you are.
So then why did – okay, well, you keep talking because now I'm interested.
Okay, that's fine. I'll tell you the two seed that I think is vulnerable.
Okay.
Is Marquette. You know, and they're vulnerable. I don't, you know, they get a lot of love. And I buy it to a degree, but you know, you're gonna have to prove it to me. And Tyler Kolek gets a lot of love, you know, and he's proven to be a good college player. Now he's questionable, at least his health is questionable for the tournament anyway, but that's the team that I think is a really vulnerable two seed. Okay. That's the way I got that one added up. Because the like Tennessee, I mean, they're just going to roll over St. Pete. And who's the other two seed? So I'm missing one other two seed. So it's Iowa State,
Tennessee,
Iowa State, Tennessee, right?
Yep.
Iowa State, Marquette. Tennessee, Marquette. Who's the fourth one?
And Arizona.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, Arizona, I mean, like your Illinois, Arizona will let you down, man.
Yeah, they'll let you down in a heartbeat.
But I'm going to take them in their first round game.
I'm going to take them in the first and second round because I don't think Dayton, Nevada, or Long Beach State have enough to really get them off their square. Dayton's been a lot more inconsistent this year than I'm used to them being. Nevada is a team that could get hot, but inconsistent. Long Beach State, you know, they
what
are
a story
they are.
That would be, though. That would be a great story of Dan.
Great.
I mean, so I
fantastic,
pick it,
fantastic story.
Pick it, but man, would I love to see them. Yeah, that would be on par with, it wouldn't be quite equal maybe, but it would be on par with Sister Jean and Loyola Chicago. Like if a guy who's lost his job rolls into the Sweet 16. I think the whole country's rooting for them.
Can we speak about that really quickly? I think these college basketball athletic administrators are classless the way they handle these situations. I don't think you should ever even discuss like the future while games are still going on. Like if you have it in your thought process, if you have it in your mind, keep it to yourself. When the season's over, the season's over. But like to have someone out there and have to have this be the storyline, I don't like it. I think it's ugly. I'm not a fan of it. I think that a lot of these athletic administrations, they talk out of both sides of their face. On one side, they say this is supposed to be amateurism and these are student athletes and blah, 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 blah. And then on the other side, they handle everything like it's big business, like it's professional sports. And I just can't understand not only this, but then the other one with the young lady, and I forget where she was coaching at, and I'm so sorry because I wanted to shout her out and really poo-poo her administration, but they essentially told her that she was done like the moment she lost the game. Like Like, you don't feel bad enough as it is that you just lost your last game of the season. But literally, before you're able to even get into the locker room, they're like, it's over. And she has to come in and answer the question about, hey, you know, what do you do next year to try to build, you know, build the team? And she's like, well, I was just informed I was not coming back, so I won't be building the team for next year. Like, that's just anyway.
My two cents there would be, you know, you can do whatever you want to do, and the coaches know that. They know what business they're in. So they can do whatever they can do. The men's get paid handsomely, so they get paid enough where, hey, guess what? Pay me, and they're hired guns, they're mercenaries, and I'll move on. It's the assistants that you got to feel worse about, because they're the ones that have a harder time and are getting paid less.
But you think Long Beach State is paying mercenary money?
No, but they're paying pretty good money. And in his case, I mean, he'd been at Minnesota for a time. He'd been the old coach at Gonzaga way back when, before the run. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not poor. He's all right, is what I'm saying. I'd be more concerned for any of his assistants. But what I was going to say is, look it, rather than what you're talking about in both those cases, if you're going to fire, maybe you fire him midseason, which goes on. Like, if you really, you know, either get it done earlier, happens, or wait days or hours, you know. But you know, it's a bad look when it's, you know, in both those cases, right after a game or right before a conference tournament, when, you know, all you got to do if you don't have that is wait a game and they'll probably lose. So anyway, but
by the way, I have clarity. Illinois did not win a championship under Billy Self. They also did not win the championship under Bruce Weber.
That team lost in the championship
game? They lost in the championship game to North Carolina.
My memory was cloudy.
Yep. I think they went to the Final Four one year, and then the other year they lost to North Carolina in the championship.
Okay.
So no championships. In fact, Illinois only has two national championships, 1915 and 1943.
Well, I don't have them winning 2024 either. So.
I don't either. That is for sure. What do we think about Alabama?
Witt's always bullish on Nate Oates and Alabama. So
in Nate Oates, you trust?
I'm going to overlook his propensity to give up, you know, 110 or 20 or 30 points in a game. And I'm going to say in a tournament restart with a contract that was just re-upped by the university, extended big time, they're going to be juiced up, and they're going to make it a couple of rounds. So I don't have them going too deep, but I do have them winning a couple of rounds.
All right.
Now, I'll tell you what. That's another one I had to stew on a little bit, because if I did not have my innate oats I trust, I would have taken Charleston in that game. So someone out there that doesn't trust in Nate Oates the way I do, take Charleston.
Okay. I can be with you there. Here's what I will say. I'm trying to figure out why he got a contract extension. I'm struggling to understand what he's done that would lend itself to saying we need to extend. Because if I'm, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he wasn't at the end of his contract, right?
No, I don't know where
this was. This was adding more years to the contract.
Yeah, I think that's what they do when they want to try to secure someone from jumping to a higher level position. So I think what he's done is he's put consistency into the program that, and they're winning at a higher level more consistently. They've obviously seen it from
more consistently than Avery Johnson.
Yes. Yes.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty darn sure about that. Yep. I'm pretty darn sure about that.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty darn sure. I mean, mostly positive.
I have not seen Alabama do anything that Avery Johnson hasn't done since.
Well, I'm gonna look. We're gonna. That's gonna be a homework assignment. We're gonna look at those numbers because I like Avery Johnson, but my sense is the numbers have been better. But to your original question, contracts get extended when they feel like a guy might jump to a higher profile situation.
So. If I'm a higher profile team, what? All right, so you put athletic director hat on. What do you like about Nate Oates so much that says, I want him at my highest of profile jobs?
Well, and I don't know the inside, but I'll just tell you he's a terrific recruiter. Shown he can get high level players. They play a game that is is kind of in vogue, if you will, with the up tempo, shoot the three, the whole deal. So I mean, I think he's I think he's a guy that creates a really positive basketball culture, and some of that stuff just creates a little bit of a buzz around the program. So I think he's pretty dang good. That's what I think. But I could be, I could have some blinders there, but I don't know.
No, I'm just wondering because I'm always fascinated by how people choose who should get more time.
Yeah.
And who should not get more time. If I remember correctly, when Avery Johnson was there, he was recruiting some of the top players in the country. I believe that his last year, the year before he was let go, he had, if not the number one recruit in the nation, a top five recruit in the nation come in. Might have been that year or the year before that year. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but When I just look at the records, it's like, okay, yeah, Nate Oates has won, some more regular season games, but I haven't really seen anything that went, okay, yeah, let's double down and now let's, unless the contract was up, and I don't know that off the top of my head, unless the contract was coming up and they said, hey, better to dance with the date that you have than to go and try to look for a new one. That might be the case. I just thought it was interesting because Avery Johnson had 4 years. I think it was 4 years. And Nate Oates has had 4 years. And Alabama is pretty much at the same, around the same area they were.
Yeah, you're saying that, and I'm going to do the homework assignment so we can move on. But I'm saying they've gone up a level, so we're going to do a little homework and come back to that point of Alabama.
Ladies and gentlemen, is when what Witt is doing is this is when he says he just wants to get off the topic. If you want to know when Witt is ready to get off the topic, like he's ready to punish. We'll do some homework. We'll get back to it, but. Just so you guys know, I will 100% be doing this homework, and we will be getting back to this now that we are back in the fold. Real quickly, I wanna get to some other things. Not leaving the tournament. I want to quickly apologize, to Hubert Davis. Although I still have my reservations. This is a fantastic bounce back year after what I consider to be the most disastrous, you probably should have been fired season I've seen in North Carolina history. Like what he was able to do, galvanizing, getting that team back, playing good basketball, playing not top seed basketball. I shouldn't even just say good basketball. That's trying to pull the chair from underneath them. I don't like the fact they didn't win the NCAA tournament, but I understand it's hard to stay focused all the time when people are gunning for you and all those things. I think they have a pretty decent draw. Mississippi State, Michigan State in the second round. That's going to be a game that's a winnable game. St. Mary's possibly in the third round will be a tough defensive effort by St. Mary's, but I think that North Carolina has what's necessary in order to get that dub. If St. Mary's gets past Alabama, but if North Carolina and Alabama meet, if they meet in the third round, take the over because Alabama doesn't play any defense. So definitely do that on there. What do you think about anything else on the like on the brackets that really stand out to you? Kansas has a 4 seed is interesting.
Yeah, that's what they got overseeded. They probably should be below that.
They haven't looked good. And by the way, how is that purchase of players working out for Kansas this year?
Yeah, in the same way it worked out for Juwan Howard at Michigan, apparently. When I get the chance, I'm going to have to investigate what, you know, the crown jewel, Hunter Dickinson, what the influence of him on the team might be. Because, it, you know, with all due respect, it seems like something's missing.
Well, you know, he had a heart attack or something like that, right? Didn't Juwan Howard have a heart attack or have heart surgery or something?
Yeah. But I know that.
I just don't think you ever, like, I don't know. I thought it was a really interesting time to fire a guy who's bled Michigan, you know, bled maize and blue his entire life. But I don't think he gets fired if he didn't have some of the other incidents that have happened attached to him. I think that gave them the blessing to go ahead and not give him another year to get this thing back right. But I really felt bad for Juwan Howard because I know that this was a job that he really – like this was the only college job he was coming back for, right?
I want to point out to the loyal listeners, you know, as much as you pointed out my quick exit when I wanted to change the discussion, I thought that was one of the quickest apologies I've ever seen on Hubert Davis. So loyal listeners will know that, you know, I've been very, very pro Hubert Davis, and I'm very pleased. And no one felt better than every time they won that I could think of Gene and how it had to make him so happy that North Carolina was back. So that was a very quick exit out of that conversation. So props to Hubert because I got Carolina in one of my brackets actually winning. The whole thing coming, okay, but I do think they obviously can go deep in this tournament. I think St. Mary's could get beat by Grand Canyon. We're not talking about that one. I think Grand Canyon's a threat anytime you win, you know, 30 games. They've got some players, and that's Bryce Drew, I believe, too. So they're a threat. I think the McNeese State, right? I mean, that's a pretty sexy pick. Is that who Kansas has got, I think, in their first round? Am I right about that?
McNeese State?
Yeah, McNeese State.
Gonzaga has McNeese State.
Yeah, okay, right. So I like McNeese State as a upset special. I mean, that's I'm not alone with that one.
Kansas has Samford, which I think will be an interesting matchup.
Samford, shout out to Nebby Exantis, former BA hooper and now a Samford assistant coach. So certainly had to take them in one pool, but didn't take them in all. They played Bucky Ball. I read up on them a little bit. Again, another team shooting the three. High school coach that never was a day spent in college as an assistant or head coach. First job. And he's got Samford rolling. They have been rolling. So they obviously are doing something right, doing a lot right.
You ready? So you ready for my upset special?
I'm ready.
James Madison is going to beat Wisconsin.
Yep.
They're going to beat Wisconsin.
And I think a fair amount of people, you know, have that one too. So you're not, you know, that's not as good as your year ago.
It's not Princeton.
Right.
Yeah, it's not Princeton, but
you're not out on the same limb. That's where, you know, that's why I said, like, McNeese, I feel like I'm out on a pretty good limb.
Are you calling McNeese over Gonzaga, though? Are you calling it?
I'm calling it.
You're calling it.
I am calling it.
Say it with your chest, because you sound like you're like.
No, I like Mark Few. That's a hard, but Gonzaga ain't the Gonzaga of the that we're used to. So they're probably overseeded a little bit too. So I'm not really, because of that, I'm not buying as much stock in St. Mary's. Mm. So I got both those teams as kind of overhyped a little bit, if you will. And so I think Alabama has a easy time getting through there. I mean,
Alabama has an easy time getting to North Carolina.
Yeah.
And then when they do, the score is going to be 115 to
yeah, it's going to be a great game.
It's going to be a lot of points.
Yeah.
I mean, why can't Alabama play any defense? Like, I don't understand it. Like, I don't get it. Is it just the style of play that we've seen that says, it's more susceptible to getting scored on? I don't know. We'll have to talk about that.
We will. That would be a good discussion point. But you know, the old rule of thumb. Sometimes your best defense is a good offense. So
well, the NBA is putting up points because everything has been legislated so that you can't play legitimate defense in the NBA.
Right.
So, like, I don't know if it's been legislated that much in college. I could be wrong. Yep. Do we give like? I think the reason that you don't feel as, or you feel a little bit shaky about Marquette is that the Big East just wasn't that great this year.
Right.
Right. I know we had a lot of Big East teams that decided they didn't want to participate in the NIT, which I thought was lame. I'll put my athletic director hat on right here. Any coach that says they don't want to go to the NIT after being passed by to go to the NCAA tournament and they decide that's what they want to do, I'm going to decide to find another coach.
Yeah, I think I don't like that at all. I think Tom Crean called him out on pretty publicly too. I haven't seen the take. I just saw the headline, but
he did, and he did after I did. But he has a platform people listen to, and I'm me. Upon hearing it, I thought it was lunacy. Like, I don't understand how that's the move you make. I don't have any respect for guys that do that. It's a selfish act. I'm going to cry and go take my ball home act. What about those players who are seniors and this is their last time playing basketball? You think those guys said, screw that, I don't want to go and play in the NIT? You think they went, oh, no, I don't want to go in and continue my basketball career. I don't want to take the chance that one person, one scout, one coach, one general manager might see a game and go, you know what? This kid has something. Let me just give him a shot. You know, like the idea that you take that opportunity away from the guys who have bled and you've sweated and have given you everything that you've asked for while you've called them, you know, names and you said that they weren't good and you've been out here trying to out-recruit them for next year. And all these things, and the only thing you have to do is to show up and coach for them for another 1, 2, 3, 4 games, as long as it takes until it's over with. How do you not look at that and say, I owe it to them? Why is it they always owe the coach, but the coach doesn't owe it to them? Like those coaches owed it to those players. And it just was a bad look. It was a bad look because it was a few Big East teams that came out that did it. And I thought it was a bad look because that league is now a private school league and it rung of privilege. It just rung of like we're better than this. Type of energy. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't put it all in the coaches. I have a feeling that was players driven, saying, you know, we don't want to play. I would guess that. I don't think it was coaches. I really don't.
So you're telling me there's not five players on that team that wanted to play?
Like, let's just take St. John's, for example.
Yeah, let's take St. John's. Were they all transferring?
No, I doubt that. I don't know the facts, obviously, so I'm just speculating. But I don't, you know, I think the team said, hey, coach, you know what? No thanks. We don't want to play. Now, it would get interesting. Like, were there five guys? In which case, if there were, then I would Rick Pitino. Yeah, we're going.
I'm taking them. I'm going to get the walk-ons.
Yeah, 100%.
No, like, and that's what I'm saying is ultimately this comes down to the coach. Like the coach making the ultimate decision that we are not going to play. Unless there were not enough players to play.
Right.
And if that's the case, guess what I'm doing as a coach? Hey, we didn't have enough players to play.
Right.
I'm not putting that on my shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's certain things that I think as a coach you are responsible for taking for the players. Yep. Like after a game you lose, it's never a good move to throw the players under the bus.
Yep.
Like, hey, but if the players decided arbitrarily that they didn't want to play in this game, there is no way that I'm just gonna go, we didn't want to play. Because everybody on the outside is gonna say, coach.
Right.
And I can't have that on my chest forever.
Yep.
So I would really love. I wish these. You know what? Let me shoot them some bail, and apologize to the coaches out there. I don't know if it was your. I don't know if you were in a position to be able to make that decision.
Homework assignment number two. I'm going to dig into that one. We've got a homework assignment.
Yeah. Now, you're going to probably be able to dig into that a lot easier than I'm going to be able to dig into that.
Yeah.
Because you can make some phone calls that I probably can't make. But I just would – oh, my gosh. It just feels so wrong. It feels wrong. It just feels wrong. Anyway, I think, though, the Big East is down, and that's why – you don't feel as good about Marquette. You can't feel as good about Creighton.
Yeah.
You know, all of them seem as if they could be beaten either in the first or the second round. Although Akron pulling off the upset might be a little bit much.
I mean, the bottom line, what you just said is I think that's the entire tournament. I think you could say that about just every team. Like people now are building up UConn rightly. With a good chance to repeat, but that's because there's not a lot of teams out there that don't have warts. So there's not it is another tournament with more parity than ever, and good luck, good luck trying to figure out who's going to get through and who's not.
Wagner up on Howard 23-12, by the way, early in that.
Okay.
Well, not early, but. Midway through that first half. So,
yep.
Okay. More stuff. Lots of tournament thing. We could talk tournament forever. NFL free agency. It's going to be a new look. New England Patriots. You can almost guarantee that the Patriots are taking a quarterback. If you had the opportunity to choose a quarterback, which quarterback would you want? And why is it Jaden Daniels?
Well, I mean, I would take Caleb Williams if I could, but Jaden Daniels would be number two. But I think, depending on what evaluations I made, obviously, I would take Marvin Harrison Jr. And I would have, and if I was the Patriots, I would have taken one of these quarterback. I would have given Justin Fields a good look. I would have given a couple of these other quarterbacks a lot stronger. Kirk Cousins, I would have given them better look. But if they, Drake May scares me, and that's who I think they're gonna end up with. And then, they talked in New England here, they've talked about weaponizing the offense, and right now they've done nothing. So it's not, you know, right now there's a bait and switch kind of feel going on to what they've done so far, because they've talked a big game from Kraft to Mayo to whatever, and so far have delivered, you know, subpar groceries.
Weaponizing the offense would not be adding Drake May. So if they're talking about weaponizing the offense, they've already made a mistake right there, if that's the thought process.
And that's Elliot Wolf. I mean, that's the, you know, GM or pseudo GM, for God's sake. That's a direct quote. So
Yeah. I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these teams make bad choices all the time. But like, Drake May is not the weaponizing the offense guy.
Right.
Weaponizing the offense to me means making it a game that's 11-on-11, not a 10-on-11 game. And although Drake May has some athleticism, Drake May is not taking off. Drake May is going to Daniel Jones. You know, he's going to run it, and then you're going to, like, he's going to turn into a crash test dummy and get broken because he doesn't. That's not what he does. I do think it's interesting though, because I'm with you, not necessarily about the Marvin Harrison Jr. thing, although I wouldn't befault anybody for taking, like, who they consider to be the top skill player in the draft. But there were so many other quarterbacks out there for the taking that have ended up in backup roles that it doesn't make sense to me why a team like New England didn't bring in a Jameis Winston to allow him to compete, to bring in a Justin Fields for a sixth round pick, you know, and a possible swap of a fourth, you know, next year, to bring in a Tyrod Taylor and allow him to be like a bridge guy or a gap guy, you know, over guys who have proven, quarterbacks who have proven that they can be starting quarterbacks in the NFL, but just may, with the situations they were in, either not gotten the opportunity like Winston and Tyrod, or where the other team has the number one pick and instead of building around him, they decide they want to hit the reset button like in Chicago. So it's interesting to see what they've done. I can't believe that the Atlanta Falcons paid
Cousins,
you know, Kirk Cousins that much money. Well, let me rewind. I can't believe teams are still trying to sign Kirk Cousins, because there's nothing in Kirk Cousins' resume that says he is the key to championship, right? So that's one thing for me. Number two, he's coming off of injury. Number three, he's old. So the fact that they gave him a contract that's going to take him into his 40s is mind-boggling to me. Like, I don't know if he has pictures of GMs in precarious situations somewhere, that he's just been able to flip this stuff, but how he has been considered the top commodity in so many different years where quarterbacks were out here getting money is crazy to me, to think about the fact that Kirk Cousins has made more money in his career as a football player than Cam Newton did in his career as a football player. Like, just on the field, not endorsements and stuff, but just on the field. I'm at a loss for words. I don't understand it. And every time people tell me, oh, well, clearly you don't know more than these people who have these jobs, I just keep pointing to all of these bonehead decisions that are made. And yes, I'm projecting this to be a bonehead decision on Atlanta, because it makes no sense to me, because they're not even like a playoff team. Like, they're not even close to a playoff team. Like, in the NFC South, which is one of the worst divisions in all of the NFL, they're not even a playoff team, and yet you go out and spend that amount of money on Kirk Cousins? To do what? Get you to the first round of the playoffs and lose? Wow. Like, congratulations to him, by the way. Cause this ain't his fault. Like, he's not paying himself, but boy, do I wonder, like, why he keeps getting all this money. I feel like a hater today. I feel like a lot.
That's all right. And it's like probably, it's probably the neglect.
Yeah, you know, I just had to get this. You know.
Yeah. That's all right.
It's all right. We've got some more stuff we're gonna have to get to another time because I know we wanted to keep this thing, yep, you know, to a respectable 50 to a minute. Yep. But LeBron James and your guy,
AJ.
Yes, JJ Reddick. Sorry. 3 for 2 Productions and the Uninterrupted have come together for a podcast that is supposedly based on the minutiae, the real, like, nerdiness of basketball. This is a podcast for guys who really, like, speak the ethos of basketball. And so it's interesting, and we won't get into it now, but I want to get back to it after you have a chance to see the first episode, so we can have a discussion about whether we believe that what JJ Redick said on First Take is true or not, that fans don't actually want to know about real basketball content. They really just want the hot takes and the arguments and the blasphemous statements. But that'll be something we definitely have to come back and chop it up about. And then also stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, because you guys know that when we get to the Final Four, we're going to be rolling out our confidence picks. And we've been pretty darn good with choosing these confidence picks based off of factors that we believe make championship teams. So you're going to want to be around for the next few weeks as we roll through the NCAA tournament and all of the things that are going back. Coach Witt, you got anything to say before we get up out of here?
Good teaser. Both of those things. Good teaser by you. Listen, hopefully, you know, sometimes a little marination to the pod is something. So shout out to our sponsors, Cycle Bar, Chicken, Heineken Zero, loyal sponsors that allowed us to take a break. But sometimes you marinate, you let things, something sit for a while, and it comes back better than ever, stronger than ever. So I think that's our case. And I did tell you, you know, there's a few listeners out there. So I'm getting some feedback that shame on me for going dark, but we're coming back big.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's once again Zebra Strikes Podcast. What episode are we on? That's a good one.
That is a good one.
I just thought about it. I'm not actually sure which episode we're on, but I will have to look.
I'm gonna guess like 6. Like, we were rolling along pretty good, and
we were doing a thing, and then we're gonna
struggle to get to a baker's dozen this year.
Oh, I don't think so. Between now and NBA finals,
we'll be
fine. I think we'll be good. By the way, this is episode 9.
Oh,
so we're definitely getting to a baker's dozen. By the way, we really were rolling. We had 9 episodes in.
Yeah.
We were rolling, ladies and gentlemen.
Fatigue. It might have been fatigue. I might have been fatigue.
What did you say? A rested wit is a good wit.
Yeah. All right.
So there we go. Ladies and gentlemen. Thank you once again, Zebra Strikes Podcast. Make sure you like. Make sure that you tell a friend. Make sure you leave a comment. We love to hear from you. Hit them up. I'm at With Azure. You hit me up at Gene Clemens, all DSPs. Until next time, take it easy.